God be in our mouths and in our speaking. God be in our ears and in our hearing. God be in our heads and in our understanding. Amen. It might seem a little perverse to begin an Easter Day sermon by referring to an obituary, but stick with me. On June the 29th last year, the Reverend Dr. John Hughes was killed in a car accident. He was Dean of Jesus College, Cambridge, and only 35 years old. He was obviously heading for great things. In fact, he'd already achieved some pretty great things. The Regius Professor of Divinity at Oxford described his work as dancing with intellectual agility, always saying something distinct and theologically profound. The reason, though, that I mention Dr. Hughes today is because of something in the beautifully written obituary to him that appeared in the Church Times. The Reverend Dr. Andrew Davison wrote about Dr. Hughes in glowing terms and included this when speaking of how John sometimes despaired of the Church of England. Don't we all? "Yet in truth," he wrote, "he rarely despaired for long, even at the Church of England, which he loved so profoundly, since he was always inclined to see things in view of the resurrection." Always inclined to see things in view of the resurrection. Reading that gave me pause for thought. How can we not see things in view of the resurrection? Isn't that what the good news is? That despite everything, despite all of the negativity that human beings aimed at God's Son up to, and including the ultimate negativity, the cross, love prevailed. Christ died for us, but that wasn't the end. There's a lively and sometimes acrimonious debate going on at the moment within evangelical circles about all of this. And one of the most thoughtful participants is the Baptist minister Steve Chalk, founder of the Oasis Trust, based just over the river in Lambeth. Steve Chalk has taken on the prevailing evangelical way of looking at this time of year, summed up by one writer as that for evangelicals, the power and credibility of Christianity as a whole hinges upon the metaphysical events leading up to, surrounding, and proceeding from Christ's death on the cross. Steve Chalk then writes this: "Today, many would claim, however, that although the cross of Jesus is central to our faith, it shares this centrality with the resurrection. The cross without the resurrection is not a victory, but a tragedy. Just one more dead would-be Messiah. It's the resurrection that changes everything." My interview for the post of priest in charge of Aldborough and the Winlands a few weeks ago took an interesting turn at one point. It so happens that the historical patron of one of the villages that make up the Winlands benefice is the Church Society, a conservative evangelical organisation. The parish itself isn't conservative evangelical, by the way. There was a representative of the Church Society on the interview panel, and when it came to his turn to ask a question, he homed in on the fact that I'd been talking in another context about sharing the good news. And he simply asked me, "So what is the good news?" I think I know what he'd have liked to have heard. And I think it would be something like, "Jesus Christ is the atoning sacrifice not merely for the sins of Christians, but for the sins of the whole world," quoting the first letter of John. I didn't say that. I don't remember exactly what I did say, but I think what I said was that the good news was that we need to be afraid of nothing. That the story of the life, death, and resurrection of Jesus Christ teaches us that nothing, not even death itself, can separate us from the love of God. Over the last week or so, I found myself telling the Passion Tide story several times, including for our final school Eucharist of the term and on Friday morning here in church for our all-age 10 o'clock service. Each time, I haven't stopped at, as it were, 3 p.m. on Good Friday with the lifeless body hanging on the cross. Or even that little bit later when Simon of Cyrene has placed Jesus' body in the tomb and rolled the stone in place. I find that I have to hint at what's to come. And I don't think that's just because I don't want to depress the children. We've spent quite a while telling the story of Jesus' betrayal and arrest, the agony in the Garden of Gethsemane, Peter's denial, and then the events surrounding the crucifixion itself. But we know it's not the end, and I find it hard to stop in the darkness. I was very struck at our Good Friday liturgy that even there was a tiny ray of hope at the end. At the very end of the service, the choir sang the stunningly beautiful setting of the words of the Crucifixus by Antonio Lotti. It's in a minor key. And full of, to use a very non-technical word, scrunches, notes next door to each other, clashing and resolving. And then it seems to be heading for a minor key ending, which would be wholly appropriate, given that the final words are, passus et sepultus est, he suffered and was buried. But no, the final chord of the music, the final sound in our ears at the end of that liturgy is a major key chord, an optimistic chord, a hint of what's to come. Going back to where I began and that obituary for John Hughes, I think his obituarist paid him the highest compliment you could pay a priest, or indeed anyone. He was always inclined to see things in the view of the resurrection. Surely that's the lens through which we, as disciples of the risen Christ, should try and see everything, the best and the worst. To quote the Exultet, sung at last night's service just after the newly lit paschal candle had been processed into the dark building and the light of Christ had shone for the first time. The power of this holy night dispels all evil, washes guilt away, restores lost innocence, brings mourners joy, it casts out hatred, brings us peace, and humbles earthly pride. Christ came back from the dead and shed his peaceful light on all mankind. May the light of the risen Christ shine on you and all those you love, now and always. Amen.